So when I'm thinking hustle, it's like...
So if I had to word association, activist hustle.
I think activism is just taking a stand.
People of color, minorities, existing as themselves fully and embracing the hell
you
out
don't,
of that.
You hustle to get something that, like, is not... On the road.
Is always a light at the end of the tunnel.
When you're a hustler, you just make it happen.
I would say action every day.
You're about to listen to an interview that highlights the dopest of millennial activist projects from across the country to feed the inner activist in all of us. Welcome to The Activist Hustle.
The Activist Hustle is brought to you by Blueprint Leadership.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Lena.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good, I'm actually really excited for episode numero dos.
I'm so excited also.
Yeah, I think Angelica Maria was so inspiring, and I've been just like eagerly waiting for these 2 weeks to pass so we can listen to the next guest.
So tell me more about our next guest.
Okay, so his name is Reginald Fields, and... He is a sophomore in college that has actually is working on two really big projects. So one of them is his like lifestyle brand called Urban Inspired, which he created, and he'll tell us more about this during the interview, but just so the listeners know a little bit, it like has the social message of being inspired by your own surroundings and has to do with fashion. So there's that. And then the second project is called Empowering Generations of Leaders, which is also known as EAGLE, which is a nonprofit that he co-founded, okay? This is a sophomore in college.
You mean, and he's going to school?
He's
going to business school.
So what, I'm really excited to talk about both of his projects. I'm really excited to talk about his journey. And honestly, I think we should just like jump right into it. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah.
He'll tell you about more.
I think the only notable thing to transition into the actual interview is to know where he's from.
Where is he from?
Dorchester! Let's go!
Okay, awesome. So you grew up in Dorchester.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you live now?
So I'm still in Dorchester.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'm still close to the roots.
And what was it like living in Dorchester? I think, you know, some of our listeners might not be from Boston,
yeah.
So they have no idea what Dorchester means.
Yeah. I think Dorchester, first of all, is a growing community. It's you know, gaining recognition. Our mayor now is from Dorchester, so that's a good plug. But it is known for being more disadvantaged than its counterparts throughout the city of Boston. Coming out of that community, you know, I saw all the different possibilities. And it was through the exposure to the Mayor's Youth Council, through the exposure to different opportunities I was given when I went to high school. And so you see this entirely new life and this entirely new way of living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a major driver for, you know, wanting to attain success, you know, in my life. And so...
Would you say that the opportunities that you were seeing were what sparked the activist in you, or do you think that the activist was living inside of you all along?
Yeah, I think it was propelled. It's like, I would say maybe like it's like a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it's like dormant, but then like something like triggers it.
Yes.
And then it gets active again. You know, I can probably trace it all the way back to my younger years when I was probably like 7 or 8, because my mom had always worked in the public sector. And she ran outreach for the mayor's health line.
Okay.
And so we'd go out into the community and always give out resources. And I remember always, you know, wanting to set up the table and, you know, put the pamphlets and the brochures out and then understand the material so I can explain it when people came. And that was just really me building up my inner public servant.
Wow.
You know, you're younger, but you don't realize that these things help you in the future.
Yeah, and that they're skills.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're learning skills and you have no idea.
Exactly.
Until later. You're older and you realize that your cohort doesn't have the same skill set. And
exactly.
You're like, well, what opportunities didn't they have?
Exactly.
Wow.
And so my work has centered around kind of leveling the playing field as much as I can.
So you've had the activist inside of you all along, from nurtured by
mm-hmm.
your mother at
mm-hmm.
an early age, part nature
yeah.
also, because you're from Dorchester. And
mm-hmm.
So what does activism mean to you?
Yeah, I think activism is just taking a stand. And I think more than ever right now, it's so popular to be an activist. I would say that to be an activist, you have to be called to the work, right? You have to really feel like the work is rewarding for you to actually think that your voice will matter. I see that a lot of people right now are very apathetic towards the voting process, towards civic engagement as a whole, and really don't think that their voice matters, and so they wouldn't consider themselves activists. But I think we really need to encourage those people to find different ways that they think they can serve, and so then they can consider themselves activists. So once people are able to just take a stand on whatever issue is passionate to them, they'll feel called to that issue, and then they themselves will be activists.
So you think there's an activist living inside of everybody?
I hope there is.
So, okay, so you grow up in Dorchester, little activist in you is being activated by your mom and your community, and then what happened there?
So I would probably say it was Urban Inspired, right? And so I created the lifestyle brand Urban Inspired, which has a social message of being inspired by your surroundings, that eighth grade summer going into ninth grade. So that was kind of when I first got started with the clothing brand, because I was very interested in fashion. I was like, well, maybe we should have a social component too.
You're just like, I like fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm socially conscious. What am I going to do with this?
Exactly.
How did this come to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, well, my mom, she also...
Yo, shout out to your mom.
Shout out to my mom, for real.
She's looking it up with activists.
No, actually... So she did fashion production in the city. So she still does. She has Fierce Styles, which is the annual fashion show. And I think it's the longest running fashion show in the city.
Wow.
I think it's going to be the 10th annual this year. So it's pretty amazing. But I had proximity towards this fashion world in the city through her. So I was able to, you know, see designers. I was able to go to Boston Fashion Week. I was able to go to all these different cool events and network there. Because I think she really made it a point that, you know, I do have some connections, but you can't just rely on me to, you know, continue on. So I would have to be the one reaching out to people, thinking about people, figuring out, okay, where am I going to find these t-shirts? Who's going to print them? You know, where am I going to find my logo? That was all me, you know, working with her just being my special advisor, as I call her.
Oh, my. So I think that you've pointed out two really important things, access and network. And while access might not be granted, like I think, you know, in this particular situation, you had the privilege of having access to something that you were passionate about, right? Like for a lot of the young people listening, it's like, if you have access to certain areas, how can you make that work to your benefit? And if you don't, how can you get there?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's many ways that people go about doing it. Like, if you don't let me in the room, I'll break down the door. Or if there's no seat, or I want a seat at the table, or I'm going to create my own table.
That's
like, there's
literally me. Yeah.
So many approaches.
Yeah.
And then the second one is the networking.
Yeah.
So you had the access from, you know, from start. You were in these spaces, and then you have all these other factors working. It's like, do you consider yourself an introvert, an extrovert? What was challenging about networking?
Yeah.
Like, how did you even pull it out of yourself? I mean, I'm not going to age myself, but I'm on the older side, and sometimes I'm like, it's hard.
Yeah, no.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's still hard for me towards this day. I mean, I go to business school now, and you're networking every day with everybody. Recruiters are always on campus, so it's still hard for me. But I didn't have much to lose, right? I remember securing my internship right after eighth grade. With Karma Loop, which was do you know Karma Loop?
I remember Karma
Loop.
But yeah, when I was in college, Karma Loop was like it.
Karma Loop was it. Karma Loop was the big thing. And I remember I was like, okay, I want to work at Karma Loop. So I emailed the CEO, Greg Selko, and I set up a meeting with him to sit down. And then I ended up going into the meeting, and I was like, Greg, I'm very interested in fashion. I really want to, you know, work here.
Yeah.
I didn't say I want to work here, but I just want to learn from him.
Yeah.
So ultimately, you know, I sat down with him, had a great conversation, left. And then I think I might have reached out to him again. And he said, hey, you know, here attached to the email is the, you know, internship coordinator. And then I had the internship that summer. So it's literally networking. And one thing I would say, too, is that... it's a lot of...
I'm shaking my head in disbelief. That's what's making him crack up.
Yeah, sorry. I would say that, you know, a lot of people say pull yourselves up by the bootstraps. And I would say for me, you know, when I was young, I didn't have the boots to really pull myself up. But what you can do is reach out to people and, you know, try to see if they'll help you. The worst that they can say is no. And multiple times, time after time, in every opportunity I've gotten, it's because I decided, hey, why not reach out? And, you know, it ultimately worked out in my favor.
And like you said, what do you have to lose?
Yeah,
what? It's just another note. Just keep a pile of notes,
yeah,
right?
Nothing,
like, yeah, another note. It's fine. But when you get that yes, it's, it opens up so many doors.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, I've worked with a lot of youth. And I consider myself a youth, too. So
you're
let's
young,
not try
yeah,
to, yeah,
young,
I'm young,
young.
I'm young. But one of the things that holds all of us back, I think the youth is really that, like, piece of, like, oh, cold calling or cold emailing or like, how do I go up to this person and introduce myself? It's like, they don't know me. Why should they care about me? And honestly, a lot of it has to do with like our identities and our personalities. And that's why I was like, are you an introvert or an extrovert? Because I think that all of that, you know, factors into it. But at the end of the day, it's like, none of that matters.
Yeah.
If you're passionate and if you have nothing to lose by reaching out, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So
I'm an introvert, extrovert, by the way. I'm both.
I feel like as an activist, you have to have some extrovert in you.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you can be an introvert at heart.
Yeah.
You have to have some.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then Urban Inspired comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have this internship with Karma Loop,
yep.
and you're still working on your Urban Inspired stuff. And then
exactly.
how do we go from there?
Mm-hmm.
Continue to take us down that journey.
So I continue with Urban Inspired. And so I was just constantly able to, you know, do new lines, you know, create new t-shirts. And I'm still doing Urban Inspired to this day. But I kind of took a little bit of a break, I would say, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we weren't, you know, pressing everything out as much during my junior, my senior year. So during those years, I became really active in business. Because I'm somebody who really believes in social entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
and I definitely think that I'll probably, you know, go through that route right
yeah.
after college. But I did a program called Launch with MIT, and so I stayed there for the summer, and we created
a
startup.
Time. How did you even get there?
Yeah. So I mean, it's really about, you know, going out and creating the life that you want. I always say this, and I'm probably gonna say
mm-hmm.
this the day I die.
Yeah.
There was no opportunity that was given to me. I just went out and created the life that I want. And so I knew that summer I really wanted to do something with business. It was that junior summer going into senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And I should probably preface this by saying I did Junior Achievement, which is a business program that you do throughout high school. You do, like, I think it was the fall of the semester. So I was like, I really love business now at this point. It's just a 12-week program, and you build a business, and I'm like, okay, this is pretty cool.
So I want you to continue because you're
going
to, but
sorry.
I just want to point out that this is the hustle, okay?
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is the hustle.
Yeah, this
so
is the hustle.
This is what we talk about here, the activist hustle. This
yeah.
is the hustle.
Yeah.
So you're doing this program.
I did the
you
program.
Know you want to do business.
Mm-hmm. So I did the program. I knew I wanted to do business, and I said this following summer, I don't really have anything to do, but I know I want to do something oriented around business. And so I sat down with my teacher, and this And I would also say that you really need people in your life who will push you and believe in you, even at the time that you don't believe in yourself. And so this teacher was that person for me. And she said, I'll sit down and we'll help you. And then we looked through Google, literally, and figured out and looked at different programs for entrepreneurship. And I found this one, and it was life-changing. You go to MIT for the summer. It's a 5-week program, and there's kids who come from all around the world. It's 60 kids who are chosen, and you learn from Harvard Business School professors, you learn from MIT Sloan professors, and you're able to kind of learn how to build a startup. You know, that was the next step for me, and I was like, okay, how am I going to continue this? And so, yeah, that was the next step.
Wow. So one thing I want to point out from that is you started by saying, I went to this program at MIT and we're ready to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, let's dissect it.
Yeah.
And in dissecting it, then you said it was a program that 60 people got chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that you had to apply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we had to do the application. It was like a video application. So you had to, you know, say why you wanted to do it. But, you know, it didn't feel like work because
mm-hmm.
you knew you wanted to go there. So it's like, okay, I'll do the video. I'll show them me. You know, I'll write up an application. And so it didn't feel like added work for me.
And I think it's so true. When you have the passion and you're driven by the passion, it doesn't seem like work.
Yeah.
It really doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I also think about the people that do see it as work, or they're not going to sit down for an hour and think thoughtfully about how to answer these essay questions when they've got work and they've got school and they've got a million of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to highlight that
mm-hmm.
because it does. While you're clearly driven by your passion,
yeah.
Like it is the hustle. Like
yeah.
it's the hustle of saying, you know what, I've worked 9 to 5, I volunteered, then I have to drive my brother to work, and then I have to come home and make dinner for my grandma.
Yeah.
But I'm going to sit down after all that and do this application because business is what I want to do.
Exactly.
And I'm passionate about it.
Exactly.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. I realize that I have had some privileges, right? Like, I have had the opportunity to be able to have the resource to have a resume and be able to have internet connection at the least to do this, right?
Right.
There's people who don't have internet connection and would never even be able to see this
or even know that this exists.
Exactly, exactly. It's not like a banner in the neighborhood. Like, no, like, these are things you have to actively seek out. And I have been very privileged in that sense to be able to have the opportunities and have the resources to be able to apply to, you know, to these programs.
But, and also, to the other end, as Gen Zs and millennials, we don't have the excuse of, oh, we don't have access.
Exactly.
Everybody has access.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is internet. Like,
yeah.
Public libraries have internet.
Exactly. Like, truthfully, if you want it, you can go out there and make the opportunity yours.
Yeah.
And when I didn't have the privilege of something, I was very quick to go out and try to get that.
Yeah.
Right? And by, it was emailing somebody or networking. You know, any opportunity that you want is yours.
So, you've done this program,
yeah.
And you've kind of had this amazing experience of being in a room with like innovative youth that
yeah.
are creating these like amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there you decide.
Yeah. So then I decide to, so I'm back in high school now and it's a senior year. And so I decide to have an event the next summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started off with a panel about the importance of youth and activism in the community, specifically in the arts sector, in the
yeah.
arts world around the communities in Boston. And then after, we had youth performances. So it was a youth dancer, youth poet, and youth fashion designers. And this was like really convenient for youth
yeah.
To just get together and have fun. And then from there, I really liked that idea. And so me and my friend Nathan, who now are the co-founders of Empowering Generations of Leaders, decided to spin off from that and really just create a entirely new organization that does have some components of having convenience for youth, but also is focused on community work. So we did Empowering Generations of Leaders, which just activates young people to get involved in entrepreneurship and civic engagement in the arts.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So one, this is extremely empowering. Like
mm-hmm.
these, just like it was empowering for you to go to that summer to MIT and be surrounded by these
yeah.
other people that were like-minded in terms of thinking innovatively and having like a purpose and a mission or a passion.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are creating these same spaces for
yeah,
other youth.
Exactly.
So how did you get participation?
I would say it was probably just tapping, first of all, your inner network, right? Because
there's that word again.
Exactly. the people who you know will show up for you, right, are your friends, the people you talk to all day, every day, and your family members, right? Those
mm-hmm.
are the people you need to first talk to, just to make sure it's not just you standing alone. And then one is social media branding. Because that's something I'm very about and I encourage all the time because it's very important. Two, and it's networking, you know,
yeah.
talk to people. Make sure they know that your event's coming up. Go to the events. The hardest part and the most important part is showing up.
It's so true.
Exactly.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard to just freaking do it, right?
Exactly.
You talked about network and creating your network and leveraging your network.
Yeah.
But I think one of the strategic things that you just mentioned is how to figure out which network goes where,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So like you're talking about, you know, this was an arts and meets fashion event and you have a fashion network
mm-hmm.
while you weren't necessarily going like, okay, where are all the people that were in my math class? Like
mm-hmm.
they'll totally be down for this. You know,
yeah.
you have to like pick and choose what networks to use and when to use them.
Exactly.
Which I think is something not a lot of people know. And it's not sleazy. The other thing that you bring up that's also really important is who's your first network? And that's your friends and your family.
Exactly.
And their assets.
Yeah.
Like your mom alone opened up so many opportunities.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's just been so supportive.
Yeah.
yeah
and
that's,
like,
that's awesome.
And not just because she's your mom and she's amazing,
yeah.
but also because she has the network too,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And it essentially becomes your network. So
yeah.
that's super cool.
I would say one story that really builds and like kind of just puts a cap on this networking. So let me preface this by saying I sat on the Institute of Contemporary Artists Teen Council for 2 years. And that was really,
of
really
high
awesome
school.
Of high school. And that was awesome because I just had an opportunity to see how a museum had space for me as a person of color and somebody who was young. And just that opportunity opened up this door because Empowering Generations of Leaders, at the top of the year, decided that we wanted to do an event. Me and Nate spoke, and I was talking to him about the Boston Globe series on racism.
Oh yeah, the Spotlight series,
which was huge. I mean, there's so many conversations going around.
Yeah. So right for now. Those of you that don't know, the Spotlight, the Boston Spotlight, which is known for kind of like exposing something, some issue, recently did a Boston racist Boston exposure where they exposed racism in healthcare, in housing, and in politics in Boston. So that's what that is.
Exactly. And so I was really kind of taken aback by that because I know that I'm going to occupy spaces within the city and, you know, this is my home. And to see the vast and very clear disparities when it came to the white and black community was just very disheartening for me. And so there
And just to give context to those listening, one of them, which still sticks, I mean, it's what everybody talks about now, is that one of the things that they found is that a white family is net worth in Boston is like $150,000, and a black Bostonian family is worth $8.
Wait. What did you just say?
Yeah, so I'm really glad we're pausing here. So take a moment, listener. We're going to take a quick break from the interview because I actually need to correct myself. I said $150,000 when in reality it's $250,000.
And oh my gosh.
It's insane. And I want you to note that, like, as I was saying $150,000, I was like, I don't know if this is the right number. It seems really high. And then I re-looked it up, and of course, it's $250,000 is the like net worth of a white family versus $8 for a black family in Boston, which I think highlights and shines a light to a couple of important things about this episode. I think one of them is the state of affairs in Boston. Like, I think another thing I mentioned on there, and I apologize for the mistake, but I mentioned the different articles that came out from Spotlight. So one of them for sure was about healthcare, one of them for sure was about housing. And the other one I said was about politics, but it actually is about sports. But regardless,
and there's a whole article about the missed opportunity of developing the seaport, which Reginald also touches on.
Exactly. And it's like, we can't talk about somebody like Reginald who is from Dorchester and has invaded so deeply all of these spaces that were not traditionally built for somebody like him without talking about racism in Boston and lack of access in Boston.
Yeah. It's really, really embedded into the history of this city.
And it's also something we don't like to talk about, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're listening to this episode and you're hearing Reginald's story, you're like, oh, great, yeah, he's just like a very passionate, hardworking person. But I think it's really important to understand the reality of Boston. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Boston is the equivalent of like 1950s South or anything like that. But what I am saying is that there is a large amount of racism and like institutional, like,
and that's the big difference though between like the racism that shows up in the North versus the racism that shows up in the South is that we're just really hidden about it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's so, you know, it's almost like Boston, no, we could never,
right?
Like, we, no, not at all. Like, look at our like, we just have a lot of history, but look at our rich neighborhoods, look at our like wealth of diversity. Look at Eastie compared to Dorchester, compared to Roxbury, compared to, and it's like, yeah, that's great, but how are we actually serving these populations?
Mm-hmm.
And how are we actually making things accessible? And I think Reginald gives us a really great example here of somebody who was like recognizing this at a very early age, as well as recognizing his talents and his passions and being like, I am not going to stop.
Yeah, and using it as a guiding, really a positive guiding force to reach his goals and be really, really intentional about those goals.
So if you're listening, I hope that you take a moment to read the Spotlight articles that came out in the Boston Globe, because I think they have some really great data, but also just speak truth to the reality of what it's like to live here. But also, I kind of want to jump in and see what Reginald has to say about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do it. Let's jump back in.
That's a vast discrepancy, yeah. Right? And it's because of institutionalized policies mm-hmm. that have really affected Black families throughout the city. But
so you see this article.
Yeah, so
and
I
you're
see this article.
Like...
And that the series took me aback. But there was a specific article. It's the power brokerage article.
Mm-hmm.
So it talked about power within the throughout the city, right? So the people who were the most powerful. And so there was no people of color. You know, how can you be in the city, which is, I don't use this word a lot, but majority minority, and you don't have any people of color who are at the top? So I said, I really want to use my network and figure out how we're going to, you know, change this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I had met so many people from the private sector, from the public sector, who were at the top of their industry
mm-hmm.
throughout the city, right?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to put them in a room with young leaders like myself who will one day, you know, occupy their spaces and one day be top leaders of color in our desired industry like
and
they
continue
are.
To push.
And continue
right?
to push,
yeah.
right? And so from that I created a proposal and I sent it over to Jill. So Jill's the head of the ICU. So I'm like, Jill, let's sit down and talk. You know, I really just want to catch up and I want to talk to you about this project. And she's like, okay. So we talk, you know, I go over to her office and I'm like, okay, there's this really cool project that I really, I'm thinking about. She said she loves the idea and she allowed the ICA to be the convening space for this. So they helped us and
God.
Exactly. And so that's using your network right there. And so we were able to have that event 2 weeks ago and we invited maybe 25 people in total. We had probably 10 professionals and 15 young people. And I tapped the young people who are really destined throughout the city to really run things,
yeah.
really be like the next mayor, the governor, the people who are the head of industries. And then for the professionals, we had people like John Barrows, who's the chief of economic
mm-hmm.
development for the city. We had people like Marta Rivera, who's the chief of staff. Adam Foss, who's doing so much for social
God.
Justice. So there was just so many power players in that room. This whole event was based on networking. I had to network to get the event at this space, and I had to network to get my friends in the room. I had to network to get the professionals in there.
Of course.
Right? And it was so important, even the space, because it was in the Seaport. And the Seaport was an opportunity for Boston to create a neighborhood for all
mm-hmm.
people, right? And we know that it's not very representative of all people of color throughout the city. So to have this convening of all people of color, just in the museum setting in the Seaport was just incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that was all networking.
Wow. So I know the listeners can't really see my face, but I've been sitting here with my mouth wide open this whole time. Like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing. And I love also that you're saying that a lot of it has to do with your network.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we have Urban Inspired
yeah.
and we have Eagle
mm-hmm.
and you're still in school.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to.
So I'm at Bentley University. Right
okay.
Now. Yeah.
But we've talked about like this trajectory and it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, so far if people have been listening and tuning in, it seems like it's all fun and games and
yeah.
dandy and passion,
mm-hmm.
but let's get real. What were some challenges?
Things happen that go wrong, you know, every single day. And, you know, my Instagram may not show that, you know, because it's just a highlight reel of everything
yeah.
that went right. But there's so many things that go wrong. I get, you know, and I talk to you about these opportunities. There are so many that I get rejected from and, you know, I get tons of no's. And I recently broadcasted that when I didn't get into the Obama Foundation summer internship. I put that on my Insta story because I wanted people to see, you know, everybody, this rejection happens to everyone.
Yeah.
It's how you bounce back. And because I generally take the long view of things, and try to find the silver lining throughout situations.
Yeah.
That's the thing that keeps you going. It's the thing that keeps you positive.
So how do you do that?
Yeah.
How do I get out of this funk of feeling overwhelmed by the issues of the world
mm-hmm.
that are so heavy, the political
yeah.
climate,
yeah.
watching people get shot by police
yeah.
officers, not being able to walk down the street without thinking that I'm going to get deported?
Yeah.
Like, how do you find the positivity and the silver lining in all in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is that, you know, it's different for everyone, right? And so for me, I mean, right now, and I haven't said this before, but seeing my brother grow up and like being able to like see the man, the young man, he's 11 now, but seeing like the young man that he's grown and turning into, like every time I'm able to just look at him and just like watch him from afar, that's when I like am just so like, you know, I feel good. Like I feel like this is gonna be somebody who's going to really just do awesome things in this world.
Okay, great. So just I think you've answered all of the questions that I had in this time, but I think I just want to hear about one more challenge.
I know you were saying something about your place, and I would add that people have to realize that the front lines isn't for everyone, right? So I know people have this idea of the activist, you know, leading the march and going out into the streets, but that's not the role that everyone needs to take, because not everyone has the skill set in order to lead in that capacity, right? I know me, I'm probably not the one who should be leading the march, but I'm somebody who will be right there, you know, walking with
looking
all of my
fresh.
Friends. Because, I'll dress up nice. But I have a lot of friends who are involved in Black Lives Matter Boston and lead a lot of marches, and I'm right there to support them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm somebody who can work within the system, right? Somebody who can be a liaison to the governor and be able to have his ear and talk to him about, you know, policies that the constituents are talking about. I'm somebody who can, you know, use business as a catalyst for change, right?
Yeah.
So people have to realize where their space is for being activists.
I love that. And, you know, that's something that we have on our first episode when we talk about activism is not a cookie cutter thing. Like, activism is not you out with a picket sign and the megaphone. Like, that's what activism is stereotyped as.
Mm-hmm.
But this is 2018.
Mm-hmm.
We're intersectional. We're breaking borders. Like, activism is low-key. It's high-key.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're here. And that's why we're highlighting so many people that are so different and that in their activism in itself is so different.
Mm-hmm.
But they all work for the same cause,
mm-hmm.
which is just, like, to make our freaking future better,
yeah.
Which is amazing. So, all right. So, what's next for you? Anything
yes.
you want to highlight? What's coming up? What do you have going on?
I know Empowering Generations of Leaders is definitely going to have another event by the end of the summer. So, please follow EGOL_organization on Instagram. You can follow me at vintage_FILS on Instagram. So, the Instagram handles where you can, you know, see what's coming up next. But I just generally am excited for the future.
Yes.
I really do believe that the future is bright. I think that this moment that's happening in politics is just a blip in the history. It takes zigs and zags, and it's not in a straight line. And like Obama says, the arc of the moral universe is long, and it bends toward justice.
Yes.
And so I know that it will ultimately bend towards justice, and it's our job to bend the arc.
That's so true. Oh, Reginald, it has been so nice to have you here today. You have, like, re-energize me. I love this. I hope that our listeners have taken something from this. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
Wow. Come on. I can't even handle the interview we just had. Like, are you joking?
I'm literally scraping my jaw off of the floor right now.
Are you kidding me right now? He is how old?
He's 19, 20 years old.
You know, this is the kind of interview that leaves me thinking, what am I doing with my life?
Oh, Jimmy. Me too. I just think, like, when I was his age, which, you know, really wasn't that long ago, I, for one, wasn't so well-spoken.
Yes.
And for two, I mean, I hadn't done half of the things that he's done by now.
Yes, and you know what? And I look back. I always look back, and I hate doing this because it's like, it's one of those things where you're comparing your experience and you're
mm-hmm.
trying to honor your own journey at the same time. But I do this sometimes. I compare journeys, and I sometimes look at people and I'm like, oh my God, this person just bought a house? Like, what? I'm nowhere near buying a house. And then I have to pause and look at my own journey and say, well, you know, I might not have been here to work to get a house, but I've traveled a lot and I've gotten to live in other cities, and my journey is just different, right? And having Reginald in front of you is just like, nah, you know that's the right path. He has done so much.
Seriously.
He can do it all. There's no need to compare and contrast. Like, he's got it. So that was absolutely amazing. So what are some takeaways from this conversation? Because a lot of that was truly beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lena. Oh, he has so much to offer, this young man. He talked about so many things that are at the core of what this podcast is about. To me, what was a huge takeaway when he was talking about how, oh, I'll go and I'll support my friends at their march, but I know that's not my activist path. You know, like, I'm working within the system. I was like, oh my God, that took me a really long time to realize that it's okay to not do activism in the way that I saw other people doing it.
Yes, I love that. And I think it goes to finding your space in the activist world, like finding what type of activist you are, finding your passion and what you have to contribute. And you know, this reminds me of one of my favorite Tupac quotes, which says, I'm not saying I'm going to change the world, but I will spark the brain that will change the world. And I think that goes to finding your space, right? Like, I might not be the one to carry this on, but I know what my contribution will be to this movement or to this sector, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's why you need your network. You need your support people.
Yes. And so that brings me to another takeaway for me, okay? So another takeaway for me is access. Like, access and networks, or I guess I would say support and networks. I mean, shout out to Reginald's mom, man. She is so responsible. She's so responsible for so much of who Reginald is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that. Like, he's like, my mom, my mom, my mom. And for everybody, it's somebody different, because we take the time to invest in somebody. And when we take the time to invest in somebody, or when we take the time to support somebody, or when we take the time to challenge somebody, we are doing that. We are doing what Reginald's mom did for him, which is, in a way, empowering and helping this activist, like, find his way.
Mm-hmm. I'm just like crying over here softly in the corner because it's so nice. I love anything that has to do with moms.
Yeah, shout out to good parents. Like,
mm-hmm.
Good parents deserve a shout out. Shout out to good parents. Shout out to struggling parents. Shout out to parents who are just trying to make it.
Yeah, just do your best.
So back to the key takeaway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Access and networks. I think the network piece, like, what a better spokesperson for the importance of networks. And I know it's an overplayed word, and I know sometimes it sounds like sleazy, and it's like, I know, Lena, here you go again talking about networks, but I cannot express it enough how important networking is to recognize your network, to build your network, and to nurture your network. It's just like the key.
Yeah, but it's so hard at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of people who really hate it for those exact reasons, like you said, that it's so, like, it's sleazy. It makes you feel like you're just using people.
Yes.
And I think that identity plays a huge part in that, because so much of what networking is like showing face and
mm-hmm.
connecting over these shared experiences, like, oh, let's go and get a beer after work.
Oh, you want to talk about the game? Cool. And it's like, well,
yeah.
But wow, where do I fit into this networking
mm-hmm.
space? And I don't feel like I can relate to any of your experiences. And I also don't feel like I should even be here, let alone start networking with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what was so important for Reginald.
I don't want you to, like, pity me and add me to your network because you feel bad for me, like you're going to add me to your LinkedIn out of some type of, like, oh, I guess that we need someone that looks like that.
Yeah,
has that
or tokenize me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So while the network is extremely challenging, I think there are so many reasons why you should do them. Like, we can think of, like, a bunch of why we can't, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
your own fear or, I mean, okay, let's just dissect it really quickly. There's no denying that a network is a smooth, paved road into whatever you are trying to achieve. Like, Reginald is the living example of this, right? So while some of us might be born into a network, and some of us might have been handed a network at Christmas, some of us have to fight our way to our network, some of us have to fight our way to know people, for some of us it comes natural, like, we're social extroverts, or it's torture.
Right, yeah.
For, like, introverts who are, like, reserved people are, like, this is torture for me. But Reginald said it best, and he, like, did cold calling, he did the emailing, he piled up the no's. And I think that it doesn't matter how you get there,
mm-hmm.
as long as you get there.
Right. I mean, whether you're working within a system or out of a system to create change, like, you're going to need a network to do that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we should end it with the wise words of a young man that said, what do you have to lose?
Ugh. What do you have to lose? You just have so much more to gain. Really.
Seriously. You have everything to gain,
mm-hmm.
and nothing to lose. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. Think about that, though. What do you have to lose? And it's time for shout outs with a special thank you to our team made up of yours truly, your host and producer, Lena Cañon, our director and producer, Rachel Sullivan, our editor and producer, Aaron Taylor, and last but not least, our creator, Brandon Rush. Today we have an extra shout out to our wonderful Amina Chandani, who keeps us looking fresh out in these social media platforms. Yes, with this color scheme, with these banners, with these logos. We appreciate you. You are an artist. And another shout out to Suffolk University for letting us record in your space. Suffolk University alum, holla! And make sure to follow us on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter as Activist Hustle. You can also email us at theactivisthustle@gmail.com or find us anywhere where you listen to your podcast. Check out our link below for our website where you can submit to be a guest or nominate somebody to be a guest.